Yeah, I have two questions. One of them is, on your allowance raises, what's the difference between a high restricted allowance raise and a low restricted classified raise? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm going to...
That's one question.
I'm going to consult with my mentor here. Any of these things, we're going to do a big question and answer on Sunday, and we'll take on all of these questions, and we'll spend more time with them. All right, but the answer to that is actually kind of simple when you look at these classified allowance raises.
Don't go again.
If, for example, you have a raise in here that says you cannot have won $20,000 first place money since September, and you have another raise the same day, classified allowance, that says you cannot have won $20,000 first raise since January. Which do you suppose is the more restrictive of the two? Which will get the better horses?
The ones that ran in September.
Yeah, the current one. And the reason for that is, suppose you have a horse prepping now, and he's running in stakes races in January, February, and March, and he's winning. And he wins these races, and he gets $30,000. He wins a $75,000 purse. So his is 55% of that, right? In California. Now, at the end of the year, they offer two kinds of races. One, for horses that have not won that kind of money since January 1. He can't run in it, because he's done that. Right? He won it in March or April. The one in September, on the other hand, says, if you haven't done that just in the last 2 months, you can run in here. And that means horses that were legitimate stakes performers earlier in the year can slip into that race. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so the first one opens it up to the culls. The second one opens it up to just horses that are prepping again, that may be 2 months or 3 months since they won that kind of money. Just think it through.
Okay, is that...
Yeah, the ones in September can be better. And the reason for that is that you can have horses that won the Stroop Stakes in March, for example, can run in that second one. Cannot run in that first one. Yes.
Oh, what would you do when I have seen some grade one winners enter in classified allowance races, and they're about way down, and they don't seem to win very often.
I throw them out almost uniformly.
Mark Kramer's favorite.
Sam, it's what I said. If they're running, if a grade one winner, a solid grade one horse is in a grade three, he's prepping. Because if you own that horse and you were capable of winning the Breeders' Cup, the $3 million classic, right? And there's a grade three race running in September, what's your intent in that grade three race?
Good workout.
What's your intent? What would your intent be?
Prep.
Okay.
Competitive workout.
See, there a lot of it is logic. What do you think? He's being prepped, isn't he? In a classified allowance race, it's the same as that grade three. He's being prepped for something. So the grade one winner that comes back off the long layoff, the race he's in is not even a remote intention. Now, if the horse can do it based on ability, he'll do it. But that is not anywhere near what they're shooting for ever.
Would that apply to grade two and grade three horse winners too?
Well, if a grade two winner is back in a classified allowance race, the problem is a little stickier, but chances are, yes, unless, and then once in a while, boy, if you have, this is a big box. Suppose that you have a grade two winner that was running poorly, that has not been able to win at grade two anymore in those last few races. Now he's in a classified allowance race. Chances are they just want him to win again. So he's well-intended. So you just have to use your, it's your thought process that will determine that. But the grade one, solid grade one horse that's back prepping is prepping, period. The others become a little, become a little shaky in terms of your interpretation. Any more?
Thank you.
We're going to go over. We're going to have long question and answer sessions on everything. So,
time is quick. How much attention do you pay to the buyers?
To the what?
The buyer figures.
Oh, the buyer numbers? Well, first of all, they're being made by competent people, and my attention to the buyer is that if the horse I'm looking at has an unexcused 67 in his last race, and before that he was running 85s. The buyer figure tells me that is a huge fall off on that horse. And so now I've got to be really careful if I'm going to go back to the second or third race back. And I use it to that extent. You can use it to evaluate a form cycle. A horse runs 90, 85, 80, 75. Don't go back and use the 90. But as far as anything beyond that, it's just a quick way of getting form evaluation. We used to have to use speed ratings and add them together. This is a little quicker way of doing it, and they're made by competent
people. One more question. It's not on this race. We want to stick it to the Sunday.
And we want to have something for Sunday, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I may, I'd just like to make a comment about the buyers. I have problems with the buyers for two reasons. They start out with a guess for what they think that race is going to run. That's one problem I have with it. The second one is they'll go back and adjust the numbers after the fact.
Yeah, okay, and they're also horrible in the mud.
Yep.
They're absolutely horrible on an off track. You'll have a horse that the best he's ever run is 70, or run a 109 and go right back to 70.
The bottom line is that we've done research for years and years on the speed rating versus the buyer number. We found out the speed rating, if you take it by and large, track after track, is 20% more predictable than the buyer numbers. Let's turn to page 40. I want to have all three of us up here. As you all know, it's no secret that Tom Brohammer is the master of pars and variants made from pars, and adjusts his horse's pace lines according to an almost infallible ability that he alone has. When he sends me races, he never tells me what lines he actually used, so I just use the lines that the horses have, and generally speaking, have to use the two adjustments to get his winners.
It's my way of testing you.
But he tests me. He's, you know, Quinn and Mitchell have invited him to go on tour with them, and if I don't get his races the way he wants them, he quits. But we got a good example of how to use the three adjustment. For years, people have said, how do you use the three adjustment? Well, Tom uses the three adjustment. He turns it to three and usually puts in E0 for all the horses and adjusts them prior to putting them in. Well, I want to show you how you can use the three adjustment with Jimmy and Tom here to go over this race with me. Let's see if we can get Jimmy and Tom to agree on the same pace lines that you can get as I got them in this race. Not because this is the ideal way, but this is the way that a lot of you are going to end up doing it. The race is on page 40. Jimmy lost his man. I didn't know you could keep one for even a whole day, much less a whole seminar. This is the ninth race at Remington. The reason I want Jimmy up here is this is the only race Jimmy lost during the day that I won and he didn't. And I was testing our little speed rating buyer number method. So let me ask Tom Brohammer, to begin with, if he agrees with the contenders that this simplistic procedure depicts. Look at the contenders and turn to page 42. While they're thinking about it, notice something that I do that I suggest you all do, and Jimmy does. When it's a tandem race, right, this is the only mark you'll ever see on Jimmy's racing form. Put the word T-A-N, or however you want to spell tandem, in when it's a tandem race. That way you'll know. Tandems are the way that Jimmy initially began conceiving his concept of the matchup. So while they're going over this,
okay, I guess the first comment I have is that we use Oklahoma breads to pull the starting gate at Santa Anita. Our contenders are who? Wally Badger?
Wally Badger. Number one. RF, R Forbes. And Don L. are the only ones that qualified by this particular procedure.
This brings up first of all, a number one attack is certainly a contender for me. Our Forbes would be too, and I would like to mention a qualifier for that, for the contender guidelines, for those of you that haven't read it. One of the exceptions to the reason they're not rules is one of the ways you bend that a little bit is a horse is stretching out. You get very loose on where they were at the stretch call at that 6 furlong, in the 6 furlong race when they stretch out. You'll find that in some of the several issues of the follow-up. You'll find it in the lecture series and a few things like that. That's one of the qualifiers. So when you look at R. Forbes on the stretch out, that horse would definitely be a contender for me. The horse I'd have to stretch for is Wally Badger, I think.
Well, I put him in because he ran in a tandem with number one attack.
Okay. My question's for Jimmy. How do Trinity, does Trinity Meadows, does that, do they run well at Remington?
They went there. The first 2 weeks they went there.
The first 2 weeks they did, Tommy.
Okay, and then from then on,
they did.
Yeah, I the only one I would stretch for is Wally Badger. And I guess you treat him as a layoff horse.
Yeah. Wally Badger was, incidentally, was the favorite. And I almost always put the favorite in because of the statistical value of the favorite. If you do as I do and play exactas, Cornellas, trifectas, or whatever is available, it was the favorite. Now, ask yourself this. Why was it the favorite, and the horse that ran in tandem with it, why would it go up at 7.5 to 1? So the tandem horse of Wally Badger, number one attack. Yeah.
Well, you know, evidently I lost this race.
Yeah, but I gloated.
And I did gloat a little bit. But
all the way home.
I still wouldn't get this horse, even on the replay. You know, I did not like Wally Badger.
Well, Wally didn't win, number one. Wally didn't win.
Oh, thank heavens. I was just about to put my foot in the mouth and say that I would always bet number one attack against Wally Badger anyway, without looking at the rest of them.
I think Wally Badger won the race.
No, number one attack won the race. Wally Badger came in third, dude. Here's the results, Josh, from your own newspaper. I got this right out of the Tulsa newspaper, and the guy at the window paid me.
My contender was Duke of Crescent. Well, he was my bet, Duke of Crescent, based on the tandem. The number one attack, this was a horse that I felt that had to get the lead. And I thought that Bronco Bob would run a better race and keep him from getting away. That's just a decision I made.
And he only makes a bad one once a day, so I'm not arguing with it. I'm only saying that if you're in doubt and you use this best of the last three, you will get pretty much the same kind of contenders.
It would have been very easy to have a number one attack, Duke of Crescent,